opportunity to come here and share with you some of my work on the Babi state conflicts of the mid-19th century Iran. The Babi movement was formed around the religious claims of a young merchant from Shiraz, Sayyid Ali Muhammad, who in May 1844 claimed to be the Bab or the gate of the hidden Imam, the Mahdi or the messianic figure of Islam. And his contemporaries by this term understood that he was claiming to be the deputy or the representative of the hidden Imam, and it implied that the hidden Imam or the Mahdi would appear imminently. Within 4 years, thousands of people had become Babis, and it was also just over 4 years after the inception of the movement that the first major clash occurred between the Babis and the Qajar state. And by the end of 1853, that is less than 10 years after the beginning of the movement, three other major clashes had occurred between the Babis and government forces in Iran, in which over 2,700 Babis or more had perished. And the casualties of the government forces on the Muslim side was probably much higher than that. Before the last conflict, which happened in 1853, the Babis, a group of Babis, made an attempt on the life of Nasiruddin Shah. It was an abortive attempt. It failed, but it affected the later developments in the Babi community and in the relationship between the Babis and the public in general. So the contemporaries that wrote about these events, they regarded them as instances of Babi insurrections. And these contemporaries, whether they were foreign diplomats or they were the chroniclers of the courts, so that was the view that they took on these events. And scholars who have dealt with the Babi religion and also dealt with these events, they have also taken the same view that these events, they were Babi insurrections. Of course, these events happening within such a short period and being so dramatic, they made a deep impact on the public and the authorities in Iran. And Nasiruddin Shah himself, who was the ruler in Iran, he was the ruler from 1848 to 1896. At the beginning of the Babi movement, he was alert to a perceived Babi threat for the rest of his life, because these events happened very early during his rulership. And again, during the 20th century, early in the 20th century, during the Constitutional Revolution, the contending parties, they would use, they would accuse each other of having sympathies with the Babis or having links to the Babis, and in this way they would try to discredit each other and rally support against each other. So, and these events, they have also set the agenda for the way the Baha'is today in Iran are treated. So they shaped the public attitude toward the Baha'i community, who emerged after these early years and replaced the Babi community. So these events shaped the attitude of the public toward the Baha'i community as well. The majority of the scholars who dealt with these events, they have not used the Babi and Baha'i sources that are available about these events. Either they have not had access to them, or they didn't see as significant to use these sources. And but some of these accounts that are available are very significant, because these are by eyewitnesses who had been at these places, had participated in the conflicts themselves, so they cannot be ignored. During my work with these conflicts, I was able to get hold of a number of these sources, and there are additional sources that I wasn't able to get hold of, but on the basis of some very significant Babi and Baha'i accounts and other sources that are available, I will be presenting my own interpretation of these events. And I can say that, in my opinion, none of these events was a result of a Babi attempt at insurrection. Rather, I see these events in the context of the nature of the Babi movement and the claims of the Bab that pose the challenge to the establishment at the time. And so the development and the spread of the Babi movement, it provoked the opposition of the clergy, of the ulama in Iran, and that led to public hostility toward the Babis, and in the end, it led to the intervention of the state, so that the state took action to suppress the Babi movement. That is the way I look at these events. It is obvious that in order to understand these events, we need to study the events themselves, look at the circumstances under which they happened and how the events they unfolded, but that is not sufficient. Looking at the immediate causes of these events is not sufficient for a proper understanding of these events, even though it is significant if we want to come up with plausible interpretations of the Babi's objectives. What is more important is to look at the bigger picture and look at the background causes of these events. And these background causes and factors, they were common to all these events, whereas the immediate causes to these events, they vary from one conflict to another. So I will begin with looking at the claims of the Bab and discuss why these claims, they pose the challenge to the establishment. And then also, we'll refer to some incidents of the ulama opposition to the Babi movement, and we'll also discuss some of the attitudes of the Babis, what we can term Babi ethos, their attitudes toward holy war and martyrdom, which contributed indirectly to these conflicts. And I will then go on to discuss the political developments in the country and how the relationship between the state and the Babis evolved. And what I think was very significant here was the accession to power of Amir Kabir, who was the chief minister of Nasiruddin Shah. Because it was when he came to power that it became a priority for the state to suppress the Babi movement. So I will also discuss that and discuss why became a priority for his government, for Amir Kabir's government, to oppose the Babis. Before and then after that, then I will look at the events themselves and try to discuss the circumstances, some of the features of these events, and to the extent possible, discuss some of the narrative of these events. And then in the end, I will conclude on the basis of the background causes that I will discuss, and also the immediate causes of these events. I will discuss the objectives of the Babis and whether the Babis were intent on insurrection. But before starting with the discussion of the background causes of these conflicts, I would like to start with the chronology of, with a review of some of the major events in the Babi movement. I have given you a list of these events, and your permission, I will go through it. Ali Muhammad Shirazi, he makes a claim to be the Bab of the hidden Imam or the Mahdi, and already in January 1845, less than a year after the Bab begins his mission, we have the first case of Babi persecution in Iraq, and that is the when the Bab's emissary to the Shi'i shrine cities in Iraq, to the Atabat, is tried in the presence of a group of Sunni and Shi'i ulama and is convicted of heresy. And in July 1845, the Bab is put under house arrest. I mention these events so that we can put these Babi clashes in their context and see them in relationship to the earlier developments in the Babi movement. So in about May 1847, Debab is imprisoned in a fortress in Azerbaijan. That is a remote corner of the country. It is in the province of Azerbaijan, that is in the northeast of Iran. And from this time on, northwest of Iran, and from this time on, Debab remained in prison and his contact to his followers was restricted. In October 1847, a prominent cleric in Qazvin is assassinated, and in November of that year, several Babis are killed in revenge. And it wasn't clear at the time whether the Babis were involved in this assassination, but they took the blame for it and they were executed. A number of Babis were executed for it. In April 1848, the Bab publicly announces to be the Mahdi, and this is a major development in the Babi movement, and I will get back to it later. In September of 1848, on the 4th of September, Muhammad Shah dies, and later in that month, in September, a group of Babis enters the shrine of Sheikh Tabarsi in a remote corner of Mazandaran, and soon after that, the first major clash between the Babis and the Qajar state begins. Then again, in about January 1850, we have disturbances in Yazd as a result of Babi missionary activities. And just after these disturbances occur in Yazd, seven prominent Babis are executed in Tehran on the instruction of Amir Kabir. In May 1850, we have two major events, two major clashes begin in May 1850. The first one is the conflict that between the Babis and local government in Nairiz, and the second one is the most severe Babi state clash in Babi history, which took place in Zanjan. In July of that year, the Bab is publicly executed in Tabriz, and that is while the Zanjan conflict was still going on. In August 1852, a group of Babis makes an abortive attempt on the life of the Shah, and just over a year later, the second conflict in Nairiz and the fourth of the Babi state clashes occurred. So, now to the discussion about the claims of the Bab, how they developed and why they posed the challenge to the establishment. Initially, the Bab, of course, took this title, the title of the Bab, and which meant the gate, and then he claimed to be the Mahdi in person, the messianic figure of Islam in person, and also at the same time, he claimed to be a new prophet that bringing a new code of laws, abrogating Islam. But it is important to realize that from the very beginning, the Bab's higher claims, that is the claim to be the Mahdi, to be the promised one of Islam, and also to be an independent prophet, these claims were implicit in his early writings. And this is something that we can recognize the way the ulama reacted to the Bab's claims when they read his writings. They could see that from the very beginning, from his very first word that he wrote after he announced his mission in May 1844, they could recognize that this was not just the claim of a person who was saying that he was the deputy of the hidden imam. There were parallel claims. There were different layers in his writings, so he was simultaneously making a claim to be the hidden imam himself and also to be an independent prophet receiving revelation from God and having brought new laws and rules. So why did the claims of the Bab pose a challenge to the establishment? And when I say establishment, I mean primarily the religious establishment in Iran. The claim to be the Bab, it implied that he was the special deputy of the Mahdi, and this would put him in a privileged position vis-a-vis the ulama, who claimed collective deputy of the Mahdi. In a sense, if they recognized him as the special deputy of the hidden imam, it meant that they would have to submit to his authority. And the claim to be the Mahdi, if recognized, of course, it implied that the function of the ulama would cease to exist. Because the ulama, their authority derived from the fact from the theory that they were administering the religious affairs of the community on behalf of the hidden imam. And once the hidden imam, the Mahdi, appeared, there would be no more any need for the ulama to continue to exist and to continue their function. And of course, the claim to be a new prophet that questioned the finality of Islam. We can say about all these claims that by implication, they questioned the authority of the ulama, and all these claims, they were viewed by the ulama as being cases of blasphemy. Ulama is clergy, sorry, the clerics in Iran, the priests. Looking at some of the instances of the ulama opposition to the Babi movement and the Bab, starting with the earliest incident, that of the trial, arrest and trial of the Bab's emissary to the Abbasid, to Iraq, to these Shi'i shrine cities in Iraq, which he was arrested late in 1844 and put on trial in early 1845. And these ulama, the Sunni and Shi'i ulama who gathered and tried the emissary of the Bab, they issued a fatwa, and the fatwa was apparently issued in January 1845. So this is the earliest, and we have the text of this document. So they raised some charges against the Bab in this text, in the fatwa, and some of the charges were that the Bab claimed to have received revelation, that he had composed a work that resembled the Quran in style and format, that he had revealed commands and prohibitions, and there were other charges. But these were some of the major charges raised against the Bab. And of course, the conclusion was that the Bab and whoever would follow him, they would be guilty of apostasy, and many of the ulamas who put their signature under this fatwa, they condemned the Bab and his followers to death. In June 1845, several Babis, they are arrested in Shiraz and punished and expelled from the town. And in July 1845, when the Bab reaches Shiraz, arrives in Shiraz, he is put under house arrest. And it's also in July 1845 that the first known work of anti-Babi polemic appears. So this is also interesting to note. In November 1847, and before that I mentioned that in May 1847, the Bab was banished to Azerbaijan and remained in prison for the rest of his life from then on. In November 1847, the assassination of a prominent cleric leads to the killing of several Babis. And this is the first incident of some Babis being killed in Iran. And it was at the instigation of the ulama in Qazvin, who wanted to revenge the blood of that cleric who had been assassinated. In April 1848, the Bab is bastinadoed by the ulama in Tabriz after announcing his claim to be the Mahdi. And following that, in July, some months after that, in July, we know of two incidents where, in the first incident, the mob attacks a group of Babis in Mazandaran. And in the second incident, the Babis, they clashed with the local people in Mashhad, and that was because the local people had attacked the Babis and had taken one of them prisoner. So the Babis, they attempt to rescue their fellow believer, and then there is a clash between the Babis and the local people. And again, the ulama were involved in this. They had agitated the public against the Babis. So I think all in all, we can say that considering these events that happened early in the history of the Babi movement and also what happened later, it is very clear that in the society, in the Iranian society that was deeply religious, the Bab's claims could only be perceived as a major threat. And because the Babi movement spread so wide and so fast, so these two things coupled together, that was a major threat, and it resulted in the ulama's fierce opposition to the Wahhabi faith. But then we should also look at some of the Wahhabis' attitudes and their mentality, their outlook, and the conceptions that contributed to the clashes, and some of these conceptions they were derived from their Shi'i background. If we want to look at the expectations about the Wahhabis and what it meant to them when the Mahdi appeared, what would happen? Of course, according to the Islamic traditions, when the Mahdi appeared, he would wage a holy war on the forces of unbelief and then establish the rule of justice in the world. So that the Wahhabis, they expected that there would be some kind of warfare when the Mahdi appeared. And I already mentioned that in April 1848, the Wahhab publicly announced to be the Mahdi himself. And it's also important to note that the Bab's writings, they appeal to the millennialist fervor, to these expectations, to these ideas that were common among the population. And also we know that there is some evidence that in two parts anyway, in Qazvin and in Khorasan, the Babis, they took steps to prepare for such an eschatological war. We know that in Khorasan, for instance, they had started to gather swords and were ready that at one point a war would break out. Another thing that we should also consider is the Babis' attitude to holy war or jihad and martyrdom. It implied that they saw it not only as their right to defend themselves when attacked, but it was a religious obligation. So that defensive warfare was an obligation to the Babis. If they were attacked, they saw it as an obligation to respond and engage in warfare. And another thing that we need to look at and have in mind is the way secular authority is interpreted and viewed in the writings of the Bab. According to the Bab, Muhammad Shah's rule, and that is the ruler in Iran at the time when the movement began in Iran in 1844, Muhammad Shah's rule was illegitimate unless he accepted the Babi faith. And this implied that, of course, the Babis regarded it as legitimate to clash with the secular power in self-defense. So all this said, there is one major thing that we should not forget, and that is that there are no provisions in the writings of the Bab allowing the Babis to launch an offensive war to remove from power an illegitimate ruler. So they could engage in defensive warfare, but with regard to an offensive war that would using offensive war to oust from power an illegitimate ruler, there are no provisions of allowing this in the writings of the Bab. Now, looking at the relationship between the Qajar state and the Babis and how this relationship developed, I think we can divide it into three different periods. The early period from the beginning of the Babi movement until the Bab announces his claim to be the Mahdi, and that is during Haj Mirza Aghasi's premiership. And then after April 1848 until the change of power in September of that year, and then after Amir Kabir comes to power. Some of the features of the early period, we can say that the Bab was imprisoned, of course, but otherwise we don't have any incidents of the state in launching a persecution of the Babis. After April 1848, then there is evidence that the government issued orders that the Babis, and this is a quote from an American missionary that was stationed near the place where the Bab was kept in confinement. He says that the Babis should be arrested wherever they were found and punished with fines and beatings. So there is some evidence that the state, after the trial of the Bab in Tabriz, where he announced to be the Mahdi, the state was forced to take action against the Babis. And in general, I mentioned the incidents in July of that year about attacks on the Babis in two different places. We can see an escalation of public hostility toward the Babis and sporadic attacks on them. After Amir Kabir's accession to power, it became a priority for his government to suppress the Babis. And trying to understand Amir Kabir's motivations, I think it should be clear that he was not motivated by religious bigotry, unlike Nasiruddin Shah, who was a religious bigot. Amir Kabir was not motivated by religious concerns, but he was primarily motivated by political concerns, and his major concern was to stabilize the position of his new government, of the new government. And to understand this, we need to look at the situation in the country at the time. The country was in a state of turmoil at the time because of the mismanagement in the last years of Haji Mirza Aghasi's premiership, because Muhammad Shah himself was ill. He could not attend to the affairs of the state. So it was basically Haji Mirza Aghasi who was running the country, and he was absolutely incapable of doing that job. So there was much discontent among the populace at the time, and the state treasury was almost empty again because the provinces had not paid their taxes due to the central government. And also after Muhammad Shah's death, then fresh disorder broke out in many provinces in Iran, and this was again a common feature of the Qajar period. Whenever there was a change of power, one king would die, one Shah would die, until the new monarch had reached the capital and was coronated, then there would be disorder in the country. So there was also this situation in Iran at the time, and also we can also refer to Salar's rebellion in Khorasan, that it also spread right after Muhammad Shah's death. And this rebellion, it was the most severe rebellion in Qajar history. And it lasted for over 3 years, and it was only after 1.5 years after Amir Kabir came to power that he was able to subdue Salar's rebellion. So given this context, Amir Kabir blamed the Babis as religious dissidents for disturbing the public order and causing troubles in the country. Having this background in mind, now we can start to look at the clashes between the Babis and government forces. The first one at Sheikh Tabarsi, it began in September 1848 and continued till May 1849, 8 months. And I've already mentioned that the Sheikh Tabarsi, that is the name of a shrine in Mazandaran. As for the significance and some of the features of the episode, we can mention that as the first clash between the Babis and the state, it was a turning point in the Babi-state relations, and it influenced the later conflicts. And another thing is that about half of the core of the leadership of the Babi movement, they were killed here at Sheikh Tabarsi. There were about 500 Babi participants, and they were fighting toward the end of the conflict with some 10 to 12,000 troops and irregulars that had come to Sheikh Tabarsi to fight with the Babis, who also had artillery. And this is an indication of how seriously the authorities took this event, how seriously they viewed the event. And we know that about 1,500 people, this is an estimate, about 1,500 people were killed during the event, and about one third of them were Babis, 450 approximately. About the causes of this event, we can say that it was precipitated by the convergence of two chains of events. We have a group of Babis in Mazandaran who are heading toward Azerbaijan to release the Bab from his prison, and then Muhammad Shah dies and the country is thrown into chaos. And under the circumstances, these Babis, they are regarded as insurgents. And for this reason, then they are forced to, they are attacked and they are forced to take shelter in the shrine of Sheikh Tabarsi, and then by that time they were trapped. They had no, I mean, it was no longer possible for them to leave the area. Local people, they were intent on killing the Babis, and the Babis could not leave the area because of the landscape of Mazandaran and also because of their clothes and dialect that indicated that they were foreigners to the region. So it was not possible for them to leave the area easily without losing many of their men. And then subsequently, local militia and government forces with artillery, they attacked the Babis, and the event ended with a massacre on the surviving Babis. I have discussed this event in some detail in the paper that was published in Iranian Studies, and therefore I have not really wished to go into more detail about this event here. But about the Babis objective, here. I think to look at the Babis' objectives, I think it will help to, there are two areas that we need to look at, and one is the nature of siege warfare, and so that is a very significant thing. And when the Babis took shelter in the shrine of Sheikh Tabarsi, and later they built a fort around the shrine and were ready to engage in war, they had really no chance. That was a dead end for them. They had no chance of being able to continue to resist the forces that would be sent against them. So from the beginning, they knew that they were going to get killed. So if their intent was insurrection, then it would not make sense for them just to go to Sheikh Tabarsi and start a fight there. I mean, there would have to be other activities in Iran, in other places. They would have to try to stage rebellions in other parts of Iran, so that all in all, it could lead to somewhere. Otherwise, this was a dead end, what was happening at Sheikh Tabarsi. And I would like to read for you something that from an encyclopedia about warfare, about siege warfare, that describes the nature of siege warfare. And we know also that the Babis, when they entered the shrine of Sheikh Tabarsi, I mean, their leader told them that we are all going to get killed here, so they knew it themselves. Then it's significant that there is no indication, there is no evidence that the Babis attempt to stage rebellions in other parts of Iran while fighting was going on at Sheikh Tabarsi. And then considering this, then how, what should we conclude about the objectives of the Babis and how they view the warfare, the event, this clash? I think we can say that when the Babis realized that they were trapped at Sheikh Tabarsi, they resolved to fight fiercely and make the event into a proclamation of their religion. So to them, the significance of the event then became a proclamation of their faith. And they hoped that by their heroism and martyrdom, they could give testimony to the truth of the Babi faith, so that it became a pronunciamento of their faith and the validity of the Babi religion. Moving on to the first Nairiz conflict, it began in mid-May and 1850 and continued till late June, about 1.5 months. The battle itself lasted only a month. The event with the coming of the Babi leader to the town, it lasted about 1.5 months. Nairiz, it's a minor town in the province of Fars in southern Iran. Probably at the time it had a population of about 3,000. That is, we don't have exact figures about the demography of Iran at the time, but this is an estimate. And about 1,000 of these or more of the population in Nairiz, they were Babis. The Nairiz episode began at the same time as the Zanjan conflict began. And there are also some common features between the two events, between the Babi communities in Nairiz and Zanjan. In both towns, there were large segments of the population that were Babis. And these Babis, they had joined the movement after the conversion of their clerical leaders because of the long history of solidarity between them. So that when the leader was already a well-established cleric in the town, or well-known for the case of Nairiz, he was well-known in Iran. When he became a Babi, then his clients, his followers in the town, they became Babis as well. Some of the characteristics of the episode, we can point out that the leader of the Babis in Nairiz, whose title was Vahi, he was the most influential Babi in Iran at the time. He had had connection to the court of Muhammad Shah. And Vahid's father-in-law was the leader of a local mosque in Nairiz. So Vahid had ties with this community. It was his second home. Nairiz was his second home. Almost 1,000 people perished in this conflict, and including over 200 Babis. These figures about the Babi casualties, 200, this is a low estimate. This is something that can be established for sure from the sources that we have, but probably the casualties of the Babis were higher than that. About the causes of this event, we can point out two things. First, the missionary activities of Vahid, the Babi leader, and the second thing is the local government's decision to attack the Babis. These two things, they precipitated the conflict. And about the narrative, I can just mention some of the points so that we have an idea of what happened there. Vahid arrived in the town when the governor was absent from Nairiz, and Vahid had earlier attempted to enter the town, but the governor was there and he had instructed him to stay away from the town, and he did that. But when the governor was away, this time he entered the town. And hearing the news of Vahid's arrival, the governor gathered an army and attacked the Babis in Nairiz. And then Vahid and some of the Babis, they retreated to a fort outside Nairiz. And then the governor, they seized the fort, and reinforcements arrived with artillery from Shiraz, basically, which was the provincial capital. And after some clashes, Vahid was requested, and he agreed to leave the fort and go to the army camp, where he would argue for the validity of the Babi religion. And then the Babis were tricked to leave the fort and were subsequently attacked and defeated. So that was basically the narrative. So considering the chain of events, the way things developed at Nairiz, I think it is obvious that when Vahid arrived in Nairiz, that he was determined to carry out his missionary activities regardless of the costs, because he could have anticipated that this could lead to a conflict. And as for the Babis, it was more honorable to them to fight and fall as martyrs alongside their leader than to give in to pressure from the governor. So that, again, because of this long-standing solidarity with their leader, then it was more natural for them that to stay firm and support their leader rather than letting him be arrested by the governor or being removed in other ways. And then to the question about whether the Babis were intent on the insurrection, I think we can point out two things. One is that the Babis, of course, they retreated to a fort and engaged in siege warfare, and that was exactly the same situation as had happened at Sheikh Tabarsi. And it was clear again from the beginning that they could not win the war. And also, it's important to notice that Bahid agreed to leave the fort to go to the army camp. So I think this is an indication that the Babis, they pursued other objectives. Their objective was not just, it couldn't be an insurrection. And that Bahid's purpose, it was to proclaim the Babi cause rather than mounting an insurrection. That, I think that is the conclusion. But there are other things, there are many other factors that I haven't discussed here, but these are some of the major things. Going on to the Zanjan episode again, it began in May 1850 and continued until early January 1851, about 7.5 months. And Zanjan was a medium-sized town halfway between Tehran and Tabriz. And at the time, it had probably a population of 8,000, and there were 3,000 or more Babis in Zanjan. Some estimates say that maybe there were up to 5,000 Babis in Zanjan. Anyway, about half of the population were Babis. As for some characteristics of the episode, we can say, and this is, I think it's interesting to note this, that there had been a history of disputes between the leader of the Babis, whose title was Hujjat, and the other ulama in Zanjan. And that was because Hujjat, he had been an Akhbari cleric, and that was a school within Shia Islam, and by the beginning of the 19th century, it had basically been defeated by their opponents, the Usuli school within Shia Islam. So he was an Akhbari, and it meant that he denied the authority of the ulama, and he had on several occasions denounced them publicly. So this had happened before he became a Babi. And he had also opposed the abuses and the corruption of the local ulama. So there had been a long history of disputes between Hujjat and the other ulama in the town. Towards the end of the conflict, some 30,000 troops and irregulars, they were with 18 pieces of artillery or more, they were fighting against the Babis. And these figures about the number of the troops, this is not just something that comes from the Babi and Baha'i sources. I mean, we have foreigners who were in Iran and they reported on these conflicts, so that it's not an exaggeration. You know, 10,000 people at Sheikh Tabarsi fighting 500 people there. I mean, this wasn't an exaggeration. We have Ferrier, who was a French agent in Iran, and he says, I mean, he has this figure in his report. We have another Frenchman who was in Nasiruddin Shah's army, and he gives figures in a letter that he has written about the number of the troops. So these are not just an exaggeration based on the Babi and Baha'i accounts. And about 1,800 Babis were killed in Zanjan. About the causes of the clash, we can say that, again, point out two things. The local government's attempt at arresting Hujjat, and the second thing is the Babis' resolve to fight back in self-defense. The narrative of the event, I think we can skip that over. I can skip it. It's not that significant. So, considering the question of whether the Babis were intent on insurrection or what was their objective otherwise, I think there are different factors that we can look at. And all these factors indicate that really the Babis were not intent on insurrection. First of all, we should remember that it was from the very beginning, it was clear to both parties how the conflict would end, because Zanjan was within easy reach of Tehran and Tabriz, and these were both cities with large concentrations of armed forces. So it was very clear, everybody knew, that the Babis really had no chance to win a war there in Zanjan. And we know also that Amir Kabir had previously instructed the governor to arrest Hoxha. And this was probably because of the exaggerated reports of the ulama in Zanjan who had written to the capital and exaggerated the number of the Babis. In the official chronicles that we have from the period, they say that there were 30,000 people, 30,000 Babis in Zanjan. And that is, this is not possible at all. I mean, we can be sure that this was an exaggeration. So it is very likely that because of these reports, Amir Kabir, he instructed the governor to arrest the Hoxha to defuse a possible threat there, a potential threat. And I think it's also important to look at the timing of the event, and that is, it happened shortly after Salar's rebellion in Khorasan had been subdued, so that now the government thought that it was time to take action against the Babis. They could afford to take action against the Babis in Zanjan. And then we know also, we can be sure that the ulama, they desired to put an end to the Babi heresy in the town, and also they wished to settle their dispute, their old dispute with Hoxha at the same time. Whereas the Babis, we can be sure again that they had nothing to win from a conflict with the state. And also, we have evidence that the Babis' warfare was strictly defensive, and that was in accordance with the Hoxha's instructions. And I can here I can mention that one of the Qajar princes, Etazadu Sultana, in his history, he relates something from Mirza Abul Qasim Zanjani, who was a prominent cleric at the time of the conflict in Zanjan. And this cleric, he says, he had related to were not allowed to do this. And this cleric, Mirza Abul Qasim Zanjani, he goes on and comments that, you know, the Babis were actually, they were able to kill a lot of the ulama in Zanjan if they wished to do it. So that gives an idea of the Babis' way of waging war. So now the question is, so how the Babis, they saw the conflict, and so what did it mean to them then? We know that they saw the conflict as being imposed on them, but their sufferings nevertheless had meaning. And that was because these sufferings, they were part of those messianic woes. To the Babis, it had meaning because they could be said to be part of those messianic woes or tribulations that, according to traditions, were going to happen to the followers of the Mahdi. So in that way, they derived some satisfaction from their whole desperate situation. Now to the fourth and the last of the Babi state clashes, which happened again in Nairiz. It began in late September. The conflict itself, the clash itself began in early October and continued till early November. So about a month the conflict lasted. As for some characteristics of the episode, we can say that it witnessed an unprecedented measure of violence on the part of both the Babis and government forces. And there were about 400 Babi men and 600 women and children involved in the conflict, and about 250 or more Babis were killed. Again, this is a very low estimate. And the casualties of the government forces were probably higher. About the causes of the event, we can say the incident that triggered the conflict was the assassination of the governor of Nairiz by the Babis. So, and the governor's brutality, we should then look at two things. One is that the governor's brutality against the Babis, it had radicalized them, and the Babis also at the same time, they wished to revenge the blood of their leader Wahi, who had been killed. He had been betrayed and killed. He had gone to the army camp, but then after he had gone there, he had been executed. The narrative of the event, I think we can skip that. and then look at the Babi's objectives. And I think to assess the Babi's objectives, there are again two points we can consider. One is that we know that at no point did the Babis attempt to take control of the town. And the second thing, I think considering that is a more general observation, it's considering the whole situation and the climate of the country. We can see that given the climate in the country, especially after the Babi attempt on the life of the Shah, the Babis could anticipate that the central government would take steps to punish them once it learned of Babi involvement in the assassination of the governor of Nehriz. And this would inevitably lead to a Babi-state clash, which the Babis were bound to lose. It was clear to the Babis from the beginning. And this was exactly what happened. After the assassination, then the news reached the capital, Tehran, and then the central government instructed that the Babis should be arrested, and some of them were killed, and then the Babis retreated to the hills surrounding Nehriz, and then the conflict had already started. I think considering this, our conclusion should be that we can see that the assassination of the governor was a desperate act, and it indicates the Babis' lack of vision and their weak leadership. And this was a time of a crisis in the leadership of the Babi community, because many of the leading Babis had by then, the majority of them had been either killed during the conflict, during the previous clashes with the state, or they had been executed after the abortive attempt on the life of Nasiruddin Shah in the year before this conflict began. Some of the points that I raised here, I think we can say that in the early period up to the first Babi state clash in Mazandaran at Sheikh Tabarsi, we can observe that the spread of the Babi movement, it posed a threat to the power of the ulama and led to sporadic cases of persecution of the Babis, and that the Bab's public announcement of his claim to Mahdihood and the breach with Islam, with him in legislating new laws, bringing new laws, and also the Babis discarding the veil, the story of Tahereh discarding the veil, many of you have heard about it. So this breach with Islam and the Bab's claim to Mahdihood, it led to increased hostility toward the Babis, with cases of Babi persecutions increasing in frequency. In the later period, beginning with the first clash between the Babis and government forces, we can say that with Amir Kabir's accession to power, the suppression of the Babi movement became a priority for the state due to political considerations. And at the same time, we have noticed that the Babis, they pursued their missionary activities regardless of the consequences. At the very beginning, I mentioned that there had been disturbances in Yazd as a result of Babi missionary activities, and then the Zanjan, the Nehriz episode, that was also partly the result of the Babi leaders' missionary activities. And then the Babis' attitude toward holy war and martyrdom and their expectations about the Mahdi's coming, they also contributed indirectly to outbreak of conflicts between the Babis and the state. About the clashes themselves, in Mazandaran, the Babis were viewed as insurgents in the chaos that ensued the Shah's death, and under the circumstances, clashes between the Babis and local people developed into a conflict with the state. And in the case of the first Nehriz and the Zanjan episodes, it was primarily the presence of a strong Babi community in these towns that was perceived as a major threat and was primarily responsible for the government taking action against the Babis and precipitating the conflicts. In the second Nehriz conflict, the governor's atrocities against the Babi community led to his assassination by the Babis, and this in turn led to the involvement of the provincial and the central governments with an open conflict as a result.